The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Please keep your arms and legs inside the car at all times.
This is your final warning.
Now, here's your host, Mr. Thrill Ride himself, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, this is hour one of the Eric Metaxas Show. Welcome to the show. The best thing about the show is the guests I have on the show. So why don't I be quiet so we can bring up my guest, John Zmirak. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Eric. Thanks. Good to be on.
Don't be so enthusiastic. You scare people. Now, listen, you've got a lot of things. You write about so much. I want to talk to you about three articles that you have written. So we're going to have to go quickly. What do you want to talk about first? Do you mind talking about Nick Sandman first?
Yeah. Now, we had a weird series of events in recent days. Nick Sandman, the victim of the smear of the March for Life from a couple years back, turned 18 and settled a $250 million lawsuit against, I believe, the Washington Post and a couple of other media. He still has some suits outstanding, but he landed on his feet as he deserved to, as an innocent American who, as a minor and as a pro-life activist, was viciously smeared by an instant gathering lynch mob swarm.
Well, look, I just want to say he's a kid, a 16-year-old kid who was treated abominably, even if he had done something terrible, and he did literally nothing wrong. It's just magnificent, the sick world that we live in now, where with the Twitterverse, the nastiness and social media and so on and so forth. So this to me is very encouraging news that Nick Sandman somehow got he didn't get $250 million, but if CNN settled, they're guilty. He got a lot of money. That is great news.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm delighted, and I hope he has a bright future ahead of him. He seems like a good, courageous, sober, sane, virtuous young man, the kind that we would hope religious schools would be producing. We have to remember his school turned against him. His bishop denounced him. Many of the leading lights in the so-called conservative movement denounced him instantly based on a heavily edited, doctored video that CNN put out. Why would a conservative see something on CNN, which is clearly edited, draw a conclusion from it, and immediately throw some total stranger under the bus, whether he's 16 or 65?
Hey, just to be clear that we're all sinners, I saw something on Twitter, I remember, and I said something negative about him immediately. Greg Gutfeld saw something and said something negative immediately. It was almost like classic clickbait. Now, both of us very quickly apologized and corrected ourselves, and now we see him as a hero. But it was almost the kind of thing that you'd make up for the time in which we live. I mean, it was sort of almost like a set piece of how we demonize someone with knowing nothing about them. Of course, this went on for weeks and weeks. It's really so ugly. I'm glad that the lawsuit was settled in his favor.
I do want to take credit that I saw the CNN thing and said, hey, if these were conservative students making fun of a tribal elder at a political demonstration, that's their constitutional right as Americans. But I was kind of lonely out there. I had been there. I had been making fun of various people at that age. I had been a campus activist and a high school activist. So
isn't that the point that these were kids? I mean, when you look at them, you realize they're not college kids. They're kids. They are so young. I mean, I didn't know the alphabet at that age. It's just madness.
That is what spared them. In my piece at stream.org, which is the title is, Nick Sandman wasn't supposed to survive. He was meant to end up like Mike Adams.
Now, look, a lot of people who listen to this program have no clue who Mike Adams is, barely know who Nick Sandman is. So let's educate them. Tell people, because I knew nothing about Mike Adams until I heard of his death and read a couple of articles a couple of days ago.
Right. Mike Adams was a brilliant, funny professor and conservative columnist. He had been an editor at David Horowitz's Front Page magazine. He wrote for Town Hall. He wrote all over the place. He was a happy warrior. He's kind of like you and me, Eric. He had fun arguing with the left and taking down their sacred cows. He tweeted something about the lockdown a couple of months ago where he was making fun of the governor of North Carolina for treating citizens of the state like slaves and locking them down. So he said something like, Massa, we want to be free, or something like that. And it kind of reminded me of your tweet making fun of Joe Biden's.
I was going to say, it's just like my tweet making fun of Joe Biden using black lingo.
Right.
Meant to be anti-racist, but treated by Neanderthals, I guess, as racist.
Right. And since, you know, I think he made a misjudgment. He thought, well, since the language of American slavery is the only evil people understand other than the Holocaust, and since racism seems to be the only sin you can commit, I'll use that language to convey my outrage at what I think is a tyrannical governor who is treating us like less than free Americans.
Yeah.
This was turned into racist monster Mike Adams. And then they went through everything he'd written over the past 20 years. And they found that he had once said that transgenderism was a mental illness, just like the American Psychiatric Association said until like 5 minutes ago. He believed that gay marriage was an abomination, you know, the way Bill Clinton and Bob Dole and all those other far-right activists believed until
and
like
don't forget that conservative Nazi figure, Barack Obama. Don't
right.
Yeah,
exactly. So they managed to make his life on campus at University of North Carolina unbearable. And the university caved in and said, look, we need you to retire. He, I think, sued or threatened to sue. And they offered him a settlement of only $500,000. That's not that much money to give up 10 years of salary, 10 years of teaching. I don't know if he still would have gotten his pension. But the lynch mob that gathered around him, the viciousness of thousands of strangers poring over everything he'd ever written and published and looking for hateful ways to twist it and distort it the way people did to Nick Sandman and spreading it everywhere, he was found dead a few days ago. And it might be a suicide. Some people think it's more suspicious than that. But he was a good and decent man who's made to be completely alone and isolated. Mark Stein wrote a beautiful column about it. I did a column at the Stream comparing Nick Sandman and Mike Adams. And I said, Mike Adams is what they wanted to happen to Nick Sandman. When CNN commentators are saying, this kid has the most punchable face in America. When reporters from mainstream media are saying, we need to find out where he's applying to college. We need to make sure we have him his name ready if he ever applies for a job anywhere in America. They were trying to lynch Nick Sandman. And yes, the fact that he was 16 made it particularly outrageous, but it was outrageous when it happened to Mike Adams too. And we have to remember, Mike Adams is how the left rolls nowadays. Look at Mark Judge. Mark Judge is guilty of going to high school with Brett Kavanaugh and writing a book where he admitted that he had alcoholic memory lapses because he was addicted to alcohol at age 16. For that, the left used his memoir as a story Bible to coach Christine Blasey Ford in her perjury before the Senate. And he had to be demonized. As a freelance writer, now he can't find work. He had been a bartender. That's now illegal in D.C. because they've closed the bars. Mark Judge is literally trying to find a way to make a living. America won't let him. That's the goal. That's what they want. Mike Adams, Mark Judge, Representative Steve King of Iowa, because the conservatives in the Republican Party united to knock him out of his primary. Why? Because a New York Times reporter interviewed him and gave a transcript, not a recording, of his
part. Forgive me for interrupting. Somebody's drilling. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back, the full hour with John Smirak. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to John Smirak. John, let's continue. This is important stuff.
Sure. I was saying that Nick Sandman was miraculously spared from the kind of fate that the left has in mind for conservatives and Christians in America, routinely, everyone, everywhere. By a miracle, Nick Sandman was spared that fate, but he is the exception, not the rule. The rule is Mike Adams, driven to suicide, Mark Judge, rendered radioactive, can't find a decent job doing what he's great at, which is writing and editing, because, you know, the publishing profession is lockstep leftist, and everybody has to pretend that they believe Julie Swetnick, that Mark Judge and Brett Kavanaugh ran the teenage rape gang. Because even though it's not true, it doesn't matter, because he might vote to overturn abortion, and that would be a pain in the neck, so we have to believe this. So Mark Judge, you are the scapegoat. Or Bernal Trammell, God rest his soul. That black Trump supporter used to stand around holding a pro-Trump sign. He was murdered. He was just murdered in Wisconsin in broad daylight. And the chairman of the local Republican Party is saying it was a politically motivated hit.
Well, John, what's the most interesting to me is this stuff isn't covered. Like, apart from this show, and maybe conceivably Fox News will be do 2 minutes on Nick Sandman or something. But the point is that all these other names, the, as you say, they're forgotten. The man you just mentioned, this black man, I put it out on Twitter. I couldn't believe this. He was murdered for supporting Trump. Not a peep. Not
in broad daylight. Shot in broad daylight. This is not some Vince Foster conspiracy theory or Jeffrey Epstein. He was shot at in broad daylight at high noon in an American city for his political beliefs. A black guy. Okay, killed by probably white Antifa brats. And no, nothing. He's a non-person. Throw him on the trash heap of history. And you know, Eric, I have to say, if Nick Sandman were at the March for Life this year, let's say we had the March for Life today, and a 16-year-old, a bunch of 16-year-olds, and the whole thing happened exactly as it did, with Nick Sandman, you know what would happen today? The media would never issue an apology. They would never, whatever activists filmed the real event, you know, as it happened, the black Hebrew Israelites filmed it themselves and put it on the internet. Twitter and YouTube would ban the real video, so you couldn't see what really happened. Or worse, I really think this might have happened. The angry, outraged, far-left activists would have attacked Nick Sandman and his fellow high school students, would have beaten them up, maybe killed them. They might have actually beaten them up and killed them, though. You've seen these mobs in Portland and Seattle. They are attacking police. They're bringing Molotov cocktails, and the media is not even reporting it. So I think—
But I don't understand. I have to interrupt. I still cannot fathom— Like, when I watch what's happening in Portland, why aren't they all arrested and put behind bars? I cannot fathom how they're allowed to get away with this.
Because the mayor of the city is saying they shouldn't be. I mean, when the mayor, the highest civilian authority, says you can't arrest these people, what are you supposed to do? I mean, but I want to finish this thing about Nick Sandman because I'm dead serious. I think the black thugs of the black Hebrew Israelites would, if it were today, they would have beaten Nick Sandman and his friend up, maybe beaten them to death. It would not have been broadcast anywhere, not even on Fox News. You and I would be trying to find video of it. YouTube would have taken it down. We would probably have to find some Finnish equivalent of YouTube and upload it there. And you and I might get suspended from Twitter for forwarding it. The fix is in. Nick Sandman is a fluke. He may be the last person who will get away with it in America. And what was his crime? Smiling. That's what they really hated. He was smiling. He was calm. He wasn't rattled. He wasn't angry. He wasn't hateful. He just stood there while this tribal elder pounded a drum in his face after these radical mobs of these the Black Hebrew Israelites had been screaming profanity and abuse and slurs at him and his friend for more than an hour. What was he doing? He was waiting for a bus after a pro-life demonstration, and he stood his ground and he smiled. And that was enough to get him almost destroyed in America 3 years ago. It would, be, I think, be enough to get him killed today. That's how bad things are, Eric.
And what's going to happen, John? What are we going to do about this? What is the president going to do about this? I don't think, I know that most Americans aren't okay with this. So what do you suppose is going to happen?
I think what everybody should do is, you saw the McCluskeys in St. Louis, the people who defended their homes against the mob using their Second Amendment rights. I hope every honest American is going to the gun range, is getting good at using guns, is getting being safe and responsible, and that they're networking with their fellow churchgoers and gun owners, because those two things go together in America, and they go together for very good reasons. Have the people on speed dial so that if a mob shows up in your neighborhood, you can call five people who'll call five people who'll call five people, and you can have your own flash mob of people, effective de facto citizens militia, to defend your home, to defend your neighborhood, defend each other, defend your church from getting burned or looted, defend stores from being destroyed. This is something we need, spontaneous order. Remember, America was founded by citizens militias of people who knew each other from church. That might be how America gets saved too.
What an amazing statement. How sad that we've come to this. And yet, John, it is interesting because it forces us to think about what law and order are and how we've taken them for granted. I mean, the idea that we would have to protect ourselves, as you know, they did on the frontier, when you watch all of these Westerns, I mean, this was just the way it was. It was they'd be thrilled if they could get a sheriff to come to their town. But they were on their own and they learned how to be self-sufficient. That was the backbone of this country. Those are the people that founded this country. Right. And if anything, we've gotten extremely soft and out of touch with the idea that we need to be protected. I mean, it's the way we take our military for granted. We forget that being safe is not normal around the world, that, it takes tremendous civilizational effort and tremendous sacrifice to feel safe. I think we've taken that for granted. And somehow what's happening is forcing us to think about it, to think about the price of freedom.
And this will remind us of what our founders believed. They said the reason they put the Second Amendment in the Constitution, and I've got an article at stream.org I hope everyone reads, called No Second Amendment, No First. The Second Amendment was there to protect religious freedom. It was written... It was basically ripped off from the English Bill of Rights. The English Bill of Rights in 1689 said that you couldn't deny citizens their rights to carry guns because that endangered their religious freedom. Well, our founders just pulled that out and put it in our Constitution. And one of the things, there's a great book, That Every Man Be Armed by Stephen Halbrook. And he shows that in the debates about the ratification of the Constitution, the only question about the Second Amendment was, is this so obvious that it's insulting to put it in the Constitution? That every one of the founders assumed that an armed citizenry, citizens' militias, not the National Guard has nothing to do with it. That's more like the royal militias that the colony, that the king had. No, citizens' militias were the final backstop against tyranny. And all the founders assumed that if the government were taken over by evil or corrupt or insane people, i.e. the Democratic Party of 2020, ordinary people wouldn't put up with it. They wouldn't let their churches be closed or their homes seized. There would be another American Revolution. That was the backstop the founders of this country put in place. So that's what I write about at the Stream. No Second Amendment, no First. The connection between religious freedom, personal freedom, and gun rights is so intimate. It's the very DNA of America, and you need to remember that before it's too late.
There's a lot more to talk about, John. I guess I'll leave it to you. What do you want to go to from here?
Well, I would just encourage people to take a look at No Second Amendment, No First, and really think about the connection between the Christian view of the human person, human dignity, and the right to protect yourself. My co-author, frequent co-author Jason Jones, woke me up to this when he was in Iraqi Kurdistan. He was talking to the fathers who had seen their daughters and their wives raped, abducted by ISIS, sex trafficked, who'd seen their sons murdered, and they could do nothing because the Iraqi government had disarmed them. They were helpless. 170 million civilians were murdered by their own government between 1914 and 1990, according to the book Death by Government by genocide scholar R.J. Rummel. 170 million civilians, not including war casualties, murdered by their governments. They had one thing in common, Eric. Do you know what that was? They'd been disarmed by their governments. Their governments, like the Weimar Republic, which had well-meaningly collected as many guns as they could to keep people safe, people weren't safe. People were helpless in the face of tyranny.
We're gonna go to another break. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. Don't forget, folks, that we put almost everything here on YouTube, the Eric Metaxas Show channel on YouTube. You can watch this. I hope you will. I hope you share it with your friends. We'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. The president really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. Be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Metaxas to 88022 today for your chance to win a piece of history, a 2020 Make America Great Again hat. Again, that's Metaxas, Metaxas to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President, Inc.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, I've got to tell you about something that happened to me yesterday to get your reaction. I noticed that, I mean, somebody, I can't think of the woman's name who wrote this book, White Fragility, which is really a mad kind of pamphlet that corporate boards are demanding that people read. And, you know, it's utterly woke. And I think the United Methodist Church, which is another one of these, you know, mainstream hyper-liberal pseudo churches, using this woman to help do training on this issue of, you know, systemic racism or you know, any number of those terms that you want to use. And I, in my cheeky way, inimitably cheeky way, tweeted, Jesus was white, but he was also perfectly without sin. So does that present a problem, you know, for this idea of blah, 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 blah. Now, of course, I'm as always, half joking, right? Because I don't go around saying Jesus was white. And I even think of those categories of white and black and brown and whatever as pretty much ridiculous, you know?
Reminds me of the old joke, if English was good enough for Jesus Christ, it's good enough for me.
Right. And so I write this. Okay. Now, meanwhile, I have written a 600-page book, the thesis of which is effectively Jesus was a Jew, right? My Bonhoeffer book is all about how Jesus was a Jew, not an Aryan. And that presented problems for the Nazis. And of course, Bonhoeffer did his best to help them understand that, you know, Jesus was a Jew, therefore we shouldn't kill the Jews. So anyway, but when I put this out on Twitter, the Twitterati, the mob, went absolutely insane and said over and over and over, no, he was Semitic, he was Palestinian, he was Middle Eastern, he was brown, he was, and I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, now I'm confused. I thought he was a Jew, and when I think of Don Rickles and the Marx Brothers and all my favorite comedians who aren't actually black, aren't they considered basically white? In other words, when you think of Woody Allen or you think of Steven Spielberg, or you think of anybody who's Jewish, you think, well, that's a guy, classic white privilege, right? Classic white privilege. But according to what I was reading on Twitter yesterday, everyone was saying, oh, no. He was not, Jesus was not Anglo-Saxon. He was not Norwegian. Therefore, he was brown-skinned, Palestinian, whatever.
Yeah, notice that, Eric. Notice that. They don't say he was Jewish because these people don't like Jews. They think Jews are part of white privilege. They think they want justice for Palestine. No, Jesus was Palestinian. Oh, that's interesting.
But that's kind of my point. Like, are we actually saying that Jesus was not a Jew? And are we saying that Jews are not white? Like, the whole thing became so crazy, I couldn't follow it.
This is what happens when you replace vulgar, stupid racial fetishes. When you put that in the place of a vision of human dignity based in creation by God and in our common heritage from Adam and Eve. What I find particularly hilarious is people who take Darwin's gross, vulgar, hideous account of how we came to be, that we are a cosmic accident, a fart in the universe's bathtub, who somehow rose to be the apex predator, but that everything in our brain is just a series of electrochemical accidents that has no connection to eternal truth or objective reality, and everything we see around us is the result of brutal natural selection, the survival of the fittest, nature red in tooth and claw. But you know what? Pretend you believe in Martin Luther King and human equality and the Bible and Jesus for political reasons, even though we all know, in fact, Darwin's view is the real one, which, when you take it seriously, leads you to things like Hitler. Hitler is someone who took Darwin seriously and literally. And said,
well, yes, so isn't that the point, that racial categories, when you really start looking at them, they become absurd because there is racism among Black Americans, and there has been throughout the history of Black America with regard to skin color. So if somebody is a light-skinned Black, they are maybe resented by the darker skinned Blacks who think that the lighter skinned Black is shown favor, you know, by the slave owner. And in other words, this nonsense goes around and around and around. And it seems to me that, you know, if somebody is Puerto Rican and very, very light skinned, you'd say they're white. But if they're Puerto Rican and very, very dark skinned, you might say that they're Black or brown. And you think, this is really silly. Are Greeks white or olive? Are Jews white or olive?
I always
don't care. And who gets to decide? I think right. that's the ultimate question.
I always like to joke that I'm half Irish and half white. But there's something in that the Irish weren't considered white for practical political purposes at one point. But this is all arbitrary and stupid. It's all based on a lie. There is no systemic racism in America. Everything they're attributing to systemic racism can the poverty, the crime, the genuine anguish of many in the Black community, every last piece of it can be traced to the sexual revolution and the welfare state.
Well,
every last one of those things. And they don't want us talking about that. So they're waving the racism bloody shirt in our faces, thinking we won't notice what they're doing, but it's all sleight of hand.
That's why my tweet was, it was meant to be somewhat provocative, but I could not believe the blowback. And then somebody actually said Jesus was like a brown-skinned Palestinian murdered by white Roman law enforcement. Just to be clear, we'll be right back with John Smirak. Folks, I'm playing 20 questions with John Smirak. John, you wrote a piece at stream.org, 20 questions for woke people. What is it?
20 questions the woke can't answer because thinking makes their brains hurt.
Okay. 20 questions the woke can't answer. Now I'm going to maybe pretend to be a woke person. I'm going to try to answer these in a woke way. Let's see what, you know, go, let's see. I don't know.
Okay. Why are people demonstrating in American cities, burning police stations and throwing bottles at cops commanded in cities commanded by Democratic leaders? What specifically do they want? How do we get them to go home? I mean, the cops in George Floyd's case have been in jail for months. So what do you people actually want?
Okay, the first thing I want to say as a woke person is humana, 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 humana. The second thing I want to say is we want to burn it all down and maybe start anew and build a utopia. We want heaven without the cross, if I can cut to the chase.
Yeah. And what is the evil? The evil you're claiming exists everywhere is systemic racism, right? Isn't that
at least
the problem?
At least, that's just the tip of the Whiteberg.
Okay, good. It's the tip of the Ginsburg, because anti-Semitism is definitely part of the world.
And that too, yes.
What do you mean by systemic racism? How is it different from what Christians face in the Muslim world, Tibetans face in China, ethnic minorities have faced in basically every country, in every society, in every history of history?
Oh, there you go. There you go with your whataboutism.
Yeah.
QED.
Yeah, okay. That's not a response, so I'll ignore it. Why hold people to standards that you don't hold the Chinese or the Africans or Muslims? What is it about white people? Are we just superior, so we're to be held to a higher standard of behavior?
There's more of your whataboutism, John.
Yeah.
I don't accept that.
My theory that you people are actually the white supremacists, let me continue to test that out. Is that why the Smithsonian and other white institutions are designating things like punctuality and professionalism, rational thought, diligence, as part of white culture?
Okay, I've got to pull off the woke mask and get serious here, because this is too serious. What you just said is one of the in a bizarre world in which we now live. That is one of the weirdest things I have ever seen. Please explain that to my audience, because most people didn't see this. This is absolutely bizarre.
Right. Okay. Well, I actually have a whole article about it. The Smithsonian Institution of African American History, I believe it is, issued some training guidelines to its employees,
right,
where it explained to them that things like showing up for work on time, doing what's expected of you, planning ahead, trying to succeed, valuing private property, planning for the future, being married to the same person for a long time, thinking rationally, that all these things are part of white culture. They don't exist apparently in Africa and China and Peru. Nope, they're just part of white, waspy Protestant culture. So it's wrong to expect that of your employees.
Now, look, when I read that, I said, this has to be a joke.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it really is so absurd that it goes all the way around the bend to the other side.
Yeah.
You have, I mean, look, to be fair, you've had this in the American Black community for some time, where if somebody, studies hard or dresses a certain way, they might get accused of, you know, their friends in the ghetto is acting white, you know, like Bryant Gumbel, although he actually was white. But the point is that if you act a certain way, you know, your fellow blacks would accuse you of acting white. But how bizarre to define whiteness as all of these, I think, positive, objectively good things.
Yeah.
That strikes me as genuinely racist. So to put it on a placard. And
training materials that all the employees had to study. You know who's really outraged by this kind of talk? African immigrants. African immigrants who I meet are better dressed, more punctual, better spoken, better educated, a lot of them, more responsible and hardworking than I am. I guess they're whiter than I am by these standards. What this is it's taking the pathologies of ghetto culture and poor culture, because there are a lot of poor whites whose society has been broken, who don't have jobs, don't have intact families, are addicted to drugs. There are a lot of pathologies in the white community, as Charles Murray talks about in his book, Coming Apart. It's not about race. It's about poverty. It's about the sexual revolution shattering the family and encouraging people to be hedonists, to live for the moment, to be decadent, to be like Oscar Wilde. The thing is, poor people can't afford that. My mother was one of 11 kids. Only 5 of them lived to adulthood. Grew up in the Depression, malnourished. If you are poor, it's one strike and you're out. If your dad is a trustee at Oberlin and he runs a hedge fund, you can dabble in drugs. You can mess around. You can maybe break the law. He has a lawyer. You'll go to rehab. You'll be fine. In 20 years, you'll be a woke executive talking about racial injustice and having a second home in the Hamptons. But poor whites, inner city black people, recent immigrants, they get one shot. If they don't act white, or as I say, act like a Nigerian immigrant driving an Uber, if they don't live up to bourgeois standards of virtue and order and discipline, they go to jail, their life is ruined. The left poured this poison into our culture of the sexual revolution. They put a Band-Aid over it of the welfare state. That's what destroyed the black family and increasingly the working class white family. And now they're trying to dodge responsibility and blame it on whiteness, Christianity, Western culture, James Madison, Christopher Columbus, and Frederick Douglass. Don't let them get away with it.
As ever, brilliantly said. I mean, this, if we're going to talk about racism, what we're talking about, this is actual racism. It's a very curious thing, right? It's the worst thing. I mean, people talk about black time being late, and Greeks do the same thing. Like, Greeks are never on time. So we joke amongst ourselves about, oh, he's coming on Greek time. But the point is to define being Greek by a bad attribute of Greek culture. It's an absurdity. John, unfortunately, we're out of time. I wanted to end on an absurdity, though. Thank you, my friend, for bringing some sanity into the conversation, John. Always a pleasure. And I'll look for you someplace on TV tonight. I hope you'll be someplace. Rachel Maddow? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. And please check out my column at The Stream. I'm Richard Spencer's Screw Tape, and I approve this racist message where I talk about all this.
Hey there, folks. Isn't that John Zmierich just something? I love that guy. Speaking of John Zmierich, what about Mike Lindell? He's standing right here making me feel uncomfortable. Mike, cut it out. He talks to me. I'm the only one that can hear it. Corn Pop was a bad dude. Oh, that. Yeah, no, I understand. That was his imitation of Joe Biden. It was actually excellent, but only I could hear it. Listen, if you want a bobblehead doll of Mike Lindell or anything from the MyPillow.com website, they're selling everything, including his book, you want to use the code ERIC. He's really here just to remind me of that. All right, Mike, I get it. We have so much coming up. In hour two, we have part two with David Wood, one of the most insane conversations. Guys, am I right? Like, one of the most extraordinary conversations. This is the man that led Nabil Qureshi to faith after 4 years of witnessing to him. Yeah. Anyway, that's in hour two.
That interview was insane.
No, it was. And we have tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow we have a very important conversation. Very, very important. In hour one with John Solomon, who has a book out where he talks about the details of the kind of the Russia hoax conspiracy. There are things that have come out very recently which explain how it happened, but really from a journalistic point of view. This is not just somebody who's a pro-Trump figure. This is an amazing, amazing journalistic journey that he's been on over these years, and he's going to talk to us about that tomorrow. Next week, we have Diamond and Silk. Really? How do we get stars that big? We also have Phil Robertson. We have Brandon Tatum coming on. I cannot wait. Maybe we can get him on this week. Anyway, we've got all kinds of people coming on. We have more Charlie Kirk coming on. But before before I go, before we go to hour two, I have to say, yesterday I put out a tweet. It was one of those ill-considered tweets where you kind of think you're trying to be provocative or funny or start a conversation, and everyone just goes insane. I said, Jesus was white, so did he have white privilege, blah, 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 blah. And I wrote a whole book where the point of it was that Jesus was Jewish, and the Nazis were trying to paint him as a light-skinned Aryan, right? But so what came back at me on Twitter was so confusing. There are people basically saying like, no, he was a Jew, and Jews are really Palestinians, and they're dark skinned and they're Middle Eastern. And then somebody else came on and said, well, he wasn't like Scandinavian white. He was like Jewish white. So it's like evidently actually about the color of your skin, not about your racial identity. So I guess light skinned blacks aren't that black. I mean, the whole thing gets crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by Twitter, and I'm fascinated by race discussions in this culture. So my motto is don't ever tweet.
Well, you can't spell Palestinian without P-A-L-E, you know, pale. So
holy cow, I never thought of that. And I'll never think of it again, ever. Chris, you Chris is just like
I follow your tweets.
The most fascinating man.
Yeah, I know. I'm working on my Dos Equis beard here. But your tweets are always kind of fun because obviously you can't pick up on intonation. But I think we can all agree, at least after the Transfiguration event, Jesus was much lighter.
What's funny is like when I said Jesus was white, it was almost meant as a put down, like, well, he was white, so what about white privilege for him?
Yeah.
But people acted like I was saying, you know, Jesus was white, Santa Claus was white, Martin Luther King was white,
right?
And I'm white or something like that.
I'm not
a fan of the racial categories, let me put it that way. Anyway, when we come back, we're talking to somebody who is just, trust me, folks, if you haven't heard the first part, you want to hear the first part, you want to hear the second part, we've got it up on our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, please. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Some amazing stuff. We'll be right back.